I wonder how you'd answer the question, how would you describe a mature Christian? A mature Christian. Is a mature Christian one who comes to church every week? Is a mature Christian someone who's been a Christian a long time? Is a mature Christian someone who has loads of Bible knowledge? Is a mature Christian someone who's active in the life of the church? Is a mature Christian someone who's getting on in years? Is a mature Christian someone who's very gifted? Well, our passage gives us four areas of what a mature Christian looks like. A mature Christian has a relationship with Christ. A mature Christian has relationships in the church. A mature Christian has relationships in the family. And it also affects their daily work, whatever it might be. It's very practical. So first of all, verses 1 to 8 in Colossians. Paul says, set your hearts and minds on things above. What are our priorities in life? What do we live for? What motivates us? Are our lives governed by what Christ wants or what we want? The believer, one writer says, is to seek the things above. The word seek marks aspiration, desire, passion. In order to seek these things, the mind must be set on them. What are our aspirations? What are our desires? What's our passion in life? Is it our work? Is it our family? Is it our friends? Our hobbies? Or is it to seek Christ and to be more like him? What are we living for? Paul in his Philippian letter says, for me to live is Christ. Sometimes we say of someone, music is their life, or sport is his life, or she lives for her work. Of the Christian, it should be said, Jesus Christ is his or her life. Now, of course, this doesn't mean, as the saying goes, they're so heavenly minded they're no earthly use. As we see from this chapter, Paul makes it abundantly clear that setting our hearts and minds on Christ has an impact on how we live every day. And he goes on to say, put to death the old way of living. Every Christian is faced with the question, who will I identify with, the world or with Jesus? So we have to ask ourselves, has my life changed as a result of my relationship with Jesus? What are my priorities? What's different? You know, I often hear people say about someone in the church, oh, that's what so-and-so is like. You'll never change them. Ever heard that? Isn't that sad? Isn't that sad? That we can't change? Paul says we need to continually be changed to become more like Jesus. So that's the first thing. The second thing is about the Christian and the local church. One writer says this, all that Paul here urges the Colossian believers depends upon his basic assumption concerning the nature of the church. A careful study of the language he uses will show that he sees the church as a new creation, a renewed society requiring fresh way of living. So what does it mean to be a new creation? A community of believers where the barriers of separation that separate us from one another in the world are abolished. Paul writes, here there is no Greek or Jew, circumcised, uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and in all. Do we really realise what he's saying there? Barbarians were someone who did not speak Greek and were thought to be uncivilised. Scythians were known especially for their brutality and were considered by others as little better than wild beasts. And Christ transcends all the barriers and unifies people from all cultures, races and nations. Such distinctions are no longer significant. Christ alone matters. James, in his letter, asked the question, would we discriminate between a respectable person coming into church and a down and out? I heard the story of a young man, goes back a few years, young man Bill. He went off to university. He was a bit of a hippie. He had torn jeans, sweatshirt, and walked around barefoot everywhere and long straggly hair. And his accommodation was with a Christian, and they talked and talked and had discussions. And slowly Bill began to see that there was something in it and that he wanted to explore it more. He decided to go to the church near the university. I think it was probably a bit like Oxford, where the big Anglican churches there are often packed out, mainly with students. And he went across, late as usual, as a student, opened the big door and faced with a church that was pretty full. No seats at the back, because the early comers all sit there. And so he began to shuffle down the aisle, looking this way and that. He'd never been in a church before. He didn't know what went on. He didn't know what you did about where you sat. He kept going down the aisle. Couldn't see anywhere. He got to the front. So he did what he would do at the university. He plonked himself on the floor, cross-legged, and sat down. At that moment, an elderly gentleman got up at the back of the church and began to shuffle down the aisle. And everyone held their breath. They thought, poor chap, he doesn't understand youngsters today. He's going to go and tell him off. This will be highly embarrassing. And the elderly gentleman shuffled down. It took him a long time to get to the front. He couldn't walk very quickly. And he got level with Bill at the front. And very slowly and very gingerly, with great difficulty, he lowered himself to the floor and sat next to him. And there he stayed for the whole service. The hallmark of the Christian community is that of love, acceptance. And we're challenged today because there are so many different people. And we have to work out how we love and care for them. You see, it's noteworthy that when Jesus transitions from praying for himself in John 17 to praying for the disciples to praying for all Christians, the first thing he refers to is unity. I pray that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. Why is there this emphasis on love and unity and acceptance in the Christian community? Why is it so important? Is it because it's nice? Makes us feel good? And it's better to get on together, isn't it, than have differences? No. You see, in 1 John 4 we read, we love because he first loved us. Our love and care for one another, and for those who come through the door, whatever their background, as an expression of God's love for them. How will God's love be shown in our world today? God uses you and me to show that love. Sir Keir Starmer, the Labour leader, recently said, "I don't believe in God, but I can see the power of faith and the way it brings people together." You see, Jesus' prayer for the unity of his followers was in order that the world might believe. Our unity and love for one another isn't in order that we feel good and happy. No, it's about mission, reaching out into a broken world which needs to experience God's love and forgiveness. How are people going to know that God loves them? It's when we share God's love with them. I want to quote something I read in the newspaper recently. I want you to guess what it's referring to. It describes this in this way. It's a social space, a place for connections, conversations, from serendipitous meetings, for finding respite from loneliness. A place too that often provides a sense of belonging and attachment. What do you think they were referring to? And it wasn't the church.
The local pub.
Isn't it sad that society sees the local pub as the place to go to find friendship and conversation and acceptance? It doesn't speak about the church. But it ought to be the church that is the place where you find conversation, acceptance, love. An early church father quoted a Roman soldier who said, "See how these Christians love one another." So that's the second mark of maturity. The love and acceptance in the Christian community. And then thirdly, we come to the Christian and family. In Ephesians, Paul prefaces the family and master-slave section with a kind of rule for the road for social harmony. Be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. This is therefore to be thought of not as the duty of some, but rather of all. In 1 Corinthians 15, Paul speaks of Christ who is equal with the Father, but being subject to him. So you see, submission and equality are not opposed to each other, they coexist. And Paul, writing to the Galatians, saying of those who belong to Christ, "There is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." And remember the culture and context when Paul was writing. These words would have been radical, revolutionary to his hearers. A Jew was superior to a non-Jew, surely. And how on earth could a slave be equal to a free person? And as for a woman being equal to a man, well, that was preposterous in their society. But that's what Paul was saying. So submission is a mutual respect for one another, a willingness to put the needs of others before ourselves. And so Paul goes on to urge husbands to love their wives and to treat them with respect. We live in a society today where there's a huge amount of domestic violence and abuse, particularly against women. We need to be aware of such issues and be on the lookout for those who need our support and help. And notice in this passage we're looking at that the word obey is used of the children, not of the wife. The word obey has largely disappeared from the marriage service, I'm glad to say. But I want to say one more thing about families. Not everyone is in a traditional family. Many people are on their own, some by choice, some by circumstances. There are those who've lost partners, those who choose to stay single, those who are committed carers, those who would like to be married but for various reasons have never married. Talk of family can be very painful for some, and for others it emphasizes their loneliness. And this is a real challenge for the church. Psalm 68 says, God is a father to the fatherless, a defender of the widows. God sets the lonely in families. How does God set the lonely in families? Surely the church has a role to play. The New Testament gives us a picture of the church as family. The church needs to be an inclusive place, one for all people, whatever their status or sexual orientation. Some of you know I married late in life, and it was interesting as a young adult attending different churches how they treated you. One church I was at, an Anglican church in fact, had a great young adults group, and I had many, many friends there, and I'm still in touch with many of them. Other churches I went to, they looked at you a little sort of askance. Now, what are we going to do with this guy? He's on his own. One church I went to, they said, we've got a youth group meeting. That was teenagers. I was in my 30s. Other churches look at you and say, we need to find him a partner. So they'd sit you next to a nice young lady. Is that the way we should behave? You see, the church needs to play its part as a family for everyone, a place of welcome, acceptance, inclusiveness, showing love and care to all people, whatever their status. And then finally, the fourth area for Christian maturity is our attitude to our daily work. Paul, speaking about slavery, one writer says, Paul neither condones slavery nor sanctions revolt against masters. Rather, he calls on both slaves and masters to show Christian principles in their relationship and thus to attempt to change the institution from within. In other words, the love and respect we have for all people ought to exist between master and slave. That was radical too in his day. And what about work? You see, setting our minds on things above has an impact on how we live day by day, whether that's paid work, voluntary work, looking after a home, or whatever fills our days. Paul says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men or women. And he also says that our tasks should be undertaken to the best of our ability, whether someone's watching or not. So what can we say in conclusion? What does a mature Christian look like? A mature Christian is one whose priority in life is to live for Jesus Christ. What will that look like? It will affect our relationships in the church. love, unity, acceptance. It will affect our family relationships, whatever our status is. Respect and submission. And a mature Christian will be one whose day-to-day work, whether paid or unpaid, will be done as doing it for Christ. You see, maturity is practical as well as spiritual.